Good evening, and welcome to our Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley program brought to you by and at the historic Hoover Theater in San Jose. My name is Jeanette Morgan, Senior Director and Vice President of Government Affairs at National Semiconductor, and a member of the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley, and a frequent traveler. Tonight, it is my pleasure to introduce Peter Greenberg, Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, producer, and travel editor for NBC Today's show. Peter began his career as a West Coast correspondent for Newsweek before becoming the travel correspondent for ABC's Good Morning America. In 1995, he joined NBC's Today Show and spent 7 years as the chief correspondent for the Travel Channel. As host of the Peter Greenberg Worldwide Radio Show, Peter is heard live on more than 150 stations from different remote locations around the world. His website, petergreenberg.com, is one of the fastest-growing travel news sites in America and each year produces and co-hosts the Royal Tour, which offers a unique perspective and unique look at various countries with heads of state acting as tour guides. In addition to serving as travel editor-at-large for ARP and contributing editor for Men's Health, Peter created, co-executive produced, and hosted CNBC's winning specials, Inside American Airlines, A Week in the Life, and Cruise Inc., Big Money on the High Seas. Peter also won the National Emmy Award for Best Investigative Reporting for his ABC's 2020 special, What Happened to the Children. Here to give us some helpful advice from his latest book, Tough Times, Great Travels, The Detective's Guide to Hidden Deals, Unadvertised Bargains, and Great Experiences, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Everybody awake? Good. I started today in Bangkok. I travel. So I started today in Bangkok, flew to Hong Kong, flew to San Francisco, and then enjoyed the 101. And here I am. I survived the 101. I want to start off by asking everybody just one question. How many of you look at yourselves as tourists? You can raise your hand. Okay. Now that you've raised your hand to that question, when I define the word tourist, you will never raise your hand to that question ever again. My definition of the word tourist is victim waiting to happen. My definition of the word traveler is a tourist who's been victimized. So how many travelers do we have in the audience? Everybody. Come on, admit it. The problem is you wouldn't be here tonight if you didn't like to travel, or if you didn't love to travel, or if you didn't become obsessed with it. The problem is you know something else, and that is from the point you decide to go somewhere to the point you actually get home, you're probably going to be abused about 47 times. And my job, and the way I look at my job, is to try to figure out all the ways I can help you to minimize that abuse. So isn't it interesting that we define a successful journey by how much we can minimize the abuse? I only got beaten up 8 times. It was a great trip, right? I mean, take a look at what's going on out there. Right now, here's the good news. The good news is we're seeing a buyer's market in travel that is so staggering, we haven't seen anything like it in more than 33 years. The entire globe, with maybe one or two exceptions, is on sale. Because it wasn't just our economic crisis, it was a global economic crisis. The dollar, I know it's hard to believe it, but we're actually stronger than we've ever been in against certain currencies around the world, which makes us even more of a buyer's market for us for a change. It's all in our benefit. In fact, I can give you some examples, which we talked about in the book as well, but I can give you some examples where it's actually, I'm not making this up, this is not some crazy promotion, it's actually cheaper to leave home than to stay home. When was the last time that ever happened? They're selling 7-night cruises to the Caribbean for $249. Now let's do the math. That's $35 a night, including 3 meals. You can't even get out of bed in San Jose in the morning for $35. You can't do it. So the opportunities are there. But I'm not here tonight to talk about affordability, although we can answer those questions if you'd like to ask them. I'm here tonight to talk about accessibility and information and how to beat the airlines, the cruise lines, and the hotels at their own game, playing by their rules. Because let's face it right now, their rules suck. Their rules are draconian. Their rules are inflexible. Their rules are actually designed to generate revenue without officially ever raising the airfare. That's why it cost you money to check bags. That's why it cost you money for a pillow. That's why it cost you money for a soft drink. That's why it cost you money to breathe on a plane. In fact, there's one airline which you may have heard about, and they're serious about this. It's called Ryanair. They're based in Ireland. Starting next month, $1.60, basically £1, to use the lavatory on the plane. Now, I don't want to be stuck behind you if you don't have spare change. When they made that announcement, I made my own. I went on television and radio and declared war and said that we're going to turn every Ryanair flight into a BYOB flight. You know what that stands for? Bring your own bedpan. On principle alone, short of urinating in the aisle, I'm not spending $1.60 to go to the restroom. This is going too far. How many people remember last year when US Air was going to charge you for water on the plane? $2. Well, I investigated. You know what we found? There was a little asterisk on that rule. And it said they wouldn't charge you the $2 if you had to take medication. So I went on the air and I said, okay, from now on when you're going to your US Air flight, stop at the newsstand and buy a package of M&Ms. That's your medication. Let them guess whether or not it's, you know, Darvon or an almond. Well, guess what? They removed the charge. You know why? The market shifted. People were so angry. So right now, the good news is it's a buyer's market. The tough news is you have to be a very discerning buyer to realize what you're actually buying, because the add-on charges will kill you. They'll destroy your budget. And I'd like to think we're all on budgets, especially now. But the cool thing about travel is it really is resilient. It's recession-proof. It's the largest industry in the world. It employs the most number of people. It is singularly responsible for the GDP of more than 93 countries. They know. I mean, let's go down the list. Let's look, even start in the Middle East. What does Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, and Israel produce that you consume? Answer, nothing. Except what? Travel and tourism. And without that, their economy literally ends. I just came back from Thailand this morning. You want to know about the power of travel and tourism? Just close the airport for 5 days with a sit-in. Guess what happens? The government topples. Because that 1 5-day period in which they got no foreign exchange and nobody showed up because they couldn't get there, and Jeanette will understand this and anybody else in accounting would know, represented a 1.5% to 2% hit on their GDP just for 5 days. Because there's also the lag period of people who are too scared to go because they heard about it and decided to go somewhere else. The one thing I want to share with you when it comes to travel, forgetting what the economic situation is, let's talk about perception. Let's talk about the fact that Americans are the most, and I'm talking to you now, the most fearful travelers in the world. Americans. Americans are also the most geographically ignorant people on the face of the planet. They have no idea where they are, let alone where they're going. It's true. The swine flu, please. You know what I did in the middle of it? I did my radio show live from Mexico. Am I glowing in the dark or frothing at the mouth right now? I am not. In fact, we need to get a map. All the border violence that we heard about, which, by the way, is serious, 8,000 people murdered at the border, not Americans, but still people who have lives and families and kids who are no longer with us. Well, where is Cancun in relationship to Nuevo Laredo? It's 900 miles away. That's like saying if you had a riot in Petaluma, you couldn't be in San Jose tonight. That's garbage. So I went down to Cancun, did the radio show from there just a month ago. You know what the staff-to-guest ratio was? 600 to me. Did I have a good time or what? It was embarrassing. I had to tell them to go away. There was nothing they could do for me anymore. I was having too much fun. The bottom line is you have to put things in perspective when you travel to make those decisions make sense. And that's what I'm trying to give you. Credible information so that you can make intelligent decisions about something you are passionate about doing, which is travel. I mean, let's go back and look at this historically. SARS, I did the same thing. I did my radio show from Hong Kong. The hotel occupancy was 3%. I had a great time. Did all my Christmas shopping. The hoof and mouth disease. How many people here went to London, got off a plane, and were met by an irradiated cow at the gate? I don't think so. Now, disease is serious. Does it mean we should have an abundance of concern and caution? Yes. An abundance of fear? Give me a break. Fear is the worst four-letter word that starts with F I can think of. And you got to get rid of that. Because when you get rid of that, the world opens up to you. You become, not by design, but you know what? It is what it is. You become a contrarian traveler. And that's what I am, and that's what you need to be. When I go to the airport, including San Jose later tonight and San Francisco today, I disobey every airport sign. Because they haven't told the truth since 1947 anyway. So when I get up to the airport, here's what I do. First of all, let's start at the beginning. How many people here make their reservations online? And why is that? Because it's easy and you can do it at 3 o'clock in the morning in your bathrobe? Right. Okay. I'm going to disabuse you of that notion. I'm going back to the future here. I love a two-word concept called human being. I like talking to one. It actually works. The internet doesn't think creatively. The internet thinks literally. And it's not showing you, I know I'm going to dispel a rumor here, it's not showing you the entire inventory that's available. It's showing the inventory they want to show you. So, look, I'm not saying don't use the internet. Use it for research. But it shouldn't be the first call you make to actually make a reservation. Because if you go to the internet and you hit all those keystrokes and you buy it, you own it. And the only person you can call after that is Ghostbusters. And you know that too. There's nobody to call. What I do is I look at the internet and then I call a human being at the airline. And it's amazing what they tell me. If I go online to get a reservation for a flight from Los Angeles to New York, you know what it's going to show me? American Airlines Flight 34, which is their premium business traveler flight that leaves around 8 o'clock in the morning from LAX and lands around 4:40 in the afternoon at JFK. That airfare could be as high as $1,100 each way in coach. That's $2,200. Now I call a human being on the phone, and you know what the human being tells me? Well, you know, we have a positioning flight that leaves an hour earlier. How many people here know what a positioning flight is? Good. I'm going to share it with everybody else now, okay? A positioning flight is they don't care who's on the plane at all. It's more important for them to get the plane to New York so it becomes the premium business traveler flight on the return trip. They have a positioning flight leaving at 7 in the morning, and the airfare is $230. Internet didn't tell me that. A human being did. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, my God, if I talk to a human being, they'll charge me $30. Yeah, I just saved you $900. I think $30 is worth it. It's not how much it costs. It's how much it's worth. So now I make my reservation with a human being. Now remember, once you make the reservation, you still have what? 24 hours in which to purchase it. That's when you surf the web. Just make the reservation. They'll hold it for 24 hours. Now go surfing. And if you can beat it on the web, that's when you do it on the web. If you do it the other way around, you're trapped. So now let's presume I've got my ticket either way. It's time to go to the airport. No, it's not. I haven't checked a bag in 8 years. I believe there are two kinds of airline bags, carry-on and lost. And you know I'm right. So on domestic flights, I FedEx my bags. I already know what you're thinking. How much does it cost? Well, there are 17 other services that will do the exact same thing, by the way, so I'm not here as a shill for FedEx. UPS, and not DHL anymore, but UPS and 15 other services will do it. First of all, generally, I know there are exceptions to this, but generally, I have a pretty good idea of where I'm going more than 24 hours in advance. So I send it 3 days in advance, UPS ground. You know what it cost me? $35. Now, I remember a time not too long ago when the airlines would gladly lose my bags for free. Now they want to charge me for losing them? Not even close. So now, what happens? They come to my house or they come to my office, they get the bag, just like they get a box, they put a wrapper on the handle, and off it goes. And when I get to where I'm going, guess where my bag is? It's in my room. I've saved 2.5 hours of my life not schlepping. The schlep factor is, it's important. You don't want it. So now, I've already FedExed my bag out. It's time to go to the airport, right? Here's where you get to disobey everything. If I have an early morning flight from SFO, for example, there is no way I'm going to the departure level. That's a zoo. I go to the arrivals level because nobody's arriving at 6 in the morning. I've saved 10 minutes in traffic. Then I just go upstairs. I printed out my boarding pass at home the night before. And I go through I have to still go through TSA. And in my case, it's not fun because I fit the profile. So I'm taken out every time. And why is that, you might ask? I'm traveling on a one-way ticket purchased within 24 hours with no bags. My first name might as well be Ahmed. Okay? So I'm accepting that. But I'm already at the gate. I'm done. Now, when I land, I don't go to Arrivals. That's a refugee center. That's everybody with police dogs and barking everybody with people's eyes transfixed on that stupid carousel, hoping against hope that their bag was on the same flight that they were, and hoping against hope that they weren't stuck with a work break at a shift change so that their bags actually arrive within 3 hours of their plane. No, I don't go to Arrivals. I have my car pick me up at departures because there's nobody there. And as I said before, when I get to where I'm going, where are my bags? In my room. How much time have I saved by not obeying a simple single airport sign? And there's another sign you shouldn't ever look at, except for one reason, to see how they're lying. Because you know they're going to lie. That's the departure board. When you get to the airport, you always look at the departure board. Right? And it always says on time. If the airlines were in the shipping business, the Titanic would still show on time. So what you want to do is only look at the departure board to see the gate you're supposed to leave from. Then ignore everything else on that departure board sign and go to the arrivals board and see what's arriving at that gate. And if nothing's arriving at that gate till next Tuesday, why would you go all the way out to that gate to be disappointed there? No, you pick up your cell phone. You never stand in line. Although I'm sorry to say, Americans are an entire generation of people who think that their only goal in life is to find a line so they can stand in it. Here, go stand over there. Okay. And then we don't see you for 6 years. Right? And by the time you get to the front of that line, all your options have evaporated. The key to successful anything is keeping your options open. And the travel industry will do everything they can to take your options away. So here's how you preserve your options. The minute you know that there's nothing arriving at that gate, you call the airline directly and get yourself protected on another flight. Otherwise, you won't be leaving. It's all about that kind of stuff that I write about in all the books. Now, you may remember that we've got a few of the books here tonight, but I mean, there was the Travel Detective Bible, which is sort of like the PDR of travel. It's like this big. Then there's the book I did right after that, which got a lot of people angry. It was designed to, by the way. It's called Don't Go There. It's my guide to all the places in the world that suck. And it's divided by pollution, crime, corruption, highways of death, toxic cities. That's just the beginning, right? And the reaction to the book was somewhat predictable, but also quite unbelievable. Because the people who reacted to it were mayors and governors banning me from those cities, calling me a jerk, and demanding to know how I could say such a thing. Well, let's start with the truth. But that wasn't what they were interested in. Because their definition of travel writing was I was their marketing partner. No, I'm not. I'm an investigative reporter who specializes in travel. Big difference. Nobody in this room needs me to tell them that the sunset's nicely in the Bahamas. I think you guys can figure that out for yourselves. What you want me to tell you and what I want to tell you is while the sun is setting nicely in the Bahamas and the airline lost your bags and the hotel has no record of your reservation and the cab driver just took you on a 50-mile ride into town when it should have been two, how can I get you all the information you need to know beforehand, the questions to ask, and to whom, so that none of that stuff ever happens to you? So I'm not the marketing partner with the travel industry, nor should I be. Jeanette mentioned my radio show. I'm the only radio show on travel that's not brokered. I'm the only radio show on travel I read no live ad copy. You know why? That's a de facto endorsement. I'm the only radio show that is not an infomercial when it comes to travel. I am not selling absizers. We actually have a protocol document. We absolutely refuse to ever interview a minister of tourism, the head of the CVB, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, or a general manager of a hotel, because all they want to do is promote. That's not what I do. And that's not why you'd be listening to that show. You want information. The only time we've ever had a minister of tourism on the show, you may remember that terrible bombing in Jordan about 3 years ago at a wedding. And it turns out that the minister of tourism was a buddy of mine, was at the wedding and helped to rescue a lot of people. He was an eyewitness. Now he has a reason for being on the show. Other than that, we've never done it. And when we've had situations where local tourism boards and ministers of tourism have said, well, if you don't interview us so we can promote our destination, you can't come, I solved the problem. We don't go. Bye-bye. That's the bottom line. That's why I fight so hard, not because I take myself too seriously, but I'd like to think that you do, that the information you need is important to you because time is money. Nobody wants stress. Oh, by the way, speaking of stress, if you're just starting to date somebody and you want to know if the relationship's going to last, just travel with them. Right, guys? For those of you who are still together in the room, You'll know because it's a question of how you adjust to stress on the road. And boy, a lot of stuff will be thrown at you. So that's the kind of stuff I do, whether it's the airlines, hotels, or cruise lines. What's interesting about the book Don't Go There is that when the governor said, how could you say such a thing? I'll give you an example of an exchange that happened. There's a state in this country, see if you can guess it, because I couldn't until the research came back, and I couldn't even believe it, but it's true. There's a state in this country that at this count, at the last count, had 127 polluted rivers and lakes. Can you name the state? And it's not New Jersey. Don't go to New Jersey. Everybody wants to go right to New Jersey. Anyone want to guess? It's not Texas. Nope. Think weird. You ready? Vermont. The green state? So what I said in the book is this. I'm not telling you not to go to Vermont. I'm not telling you not to go get your Ben and Jerry's. I'm telling you that if you want to jump in the water into Lake Champlain, you might want to read my book first. And the governor came on and said, I can't believe you would say such a thing. And I said, Governor, is it true? But why would you say it? I said, because I wasn't applying for the job of Minister of Tourism to Vermont. He said, well, I don't like your sentiment. I said, I don't like your sediment. And that's what we did in that book. We had a place, North Charleston, South Carolina, huge crime rate. The mayor called me a jerk and banned me and then demanded to know where I got my information. And this is live television. I said, great, your police chief's name is? He gave it to me. And so did the FBI when they did the statistics. So the next thing that happened was the city council held a press conference and said, we love living in North Charleston, and we'd like to invite Mr. Greenberg any night of the week on our Citizens Patrol Against Crime and Drugs. I said, wait a minute. You would have a Citizens Patrol Against Crime and Drugs because, oh, yeah, you have a problem with crime and drugs. So here's the deal. When you get your act together, call me, and I'll be the first person to let everybody know the good news. But right now, you have a problem. Why don't you just admit it? So that's what that book was all about. And by the way, we're doing that book now as a television series. And the name of the series is called Go Away, in conjunction with TripAdvisor. They're my partner on it. Because we would like you to know that we respect, and by the way, 40% of it will be user-generated because we want people to let us know where their experiences are, both good, bad, and ugly. But bottom line, and it'll be vetted thoroughly, but the bottom line is, don't you want to know where not to go as opposed to seeing the same perfect picture in the brochure? I hate brochures. I despise brochures. I know it's considered politically incorrect. I burn brochures. You know why? Read one. Every third word ends in what? The letters ST. Best, greatest, most, loveliest, nicest. And let's not forget the words pamper, luxury, and paradise. Are you throwing up yet? It's always the same size zero breast enlarged model at the pool with a wine glass. It's always Ken and Barbie playing tennis. And the hardest working couple in the travel industry, the senior couple in their bathrobes on their balcony looking at God knows what, and you know what I'm talking about because you've read those brochures, yes or no? There's no vision there. That's marketing garbage. So what we're trying to give people is an opportunity to get through all that garbage so they can actually have a great time. Now, the most current book, which Jeanette showed you, is a book that happened right before the last book came out, when we saw all the economic indicators point to the toilet. And I went to my publisher, I said, people need to know this because we're not going to stop traveling. We just need to know how we can do it. You see, there's another two words I hate, focus group. I hate them. Because anybody here use focus groups? Come on, after I said the word hate it, you were bold enough to raise your hand? Okay. Focus groups lie. They can't help themselves. You know why? Because the questions are loaded. The questions are loaded to give the person asking the question the answer they want to justify some pretty bad behavior. So right after 9/11, they asked a lot of American focus groups this question. And it was a no-brainer answer. You knew it, everybody here knows what the answer is going to be. After 9/11, will you be traveling soon? No! They forgot to ask the question, the follow-up question, which would have solved the entire problem. Do you want to? And the answer was overwhelmingly yes. But you know what? America just wanted their blankie. They wanted their security blanket. They wanted to know it was okay. Well, guess what? We've come full circle. We're right back to it again. America needs to know it's okay to travel right now. They want permission. You want permission. Why? Because there's that guilt trip associated with having fun during a meltdown, the AIG syndrome, if you will. You know what? Nobody wants to get a pedicure when Rome was burning. I got it, right? Heard AIG when they came out with that whole thing in Monarch Beach with the $400,000, you know, incentive trip. But that's not what we're talking about now. We just need to know it's okay. So I'm here to give you permission, not to promote anything, but to give you options. And that's what this book is about. It's not about, anybody remember a year ago, Memorial Day, when gas was in California, especially, it was up to $5 a gallon in some cities. AAA comes out with this announcement. Well, we've done our surveys, and there'll be fewer Americans on the road during Memorial Day weekend. And I asked AAA, really? How did you come up with that figure? Well, we counted the number of cars on the road. I said, you idiots. It's not about the number of cars on the road. It's about the number of people in the cars. We adjust. The entire Clampett family was crammed into a car. They had Granny strapped on the roof in a rocking chair. They were not going to be denied. They just adjusted. That's why you do it. It's not a question of whether you're going to travel or when you're going to travel. It's a question of how you're going, because it's in our cultural DNA. We cannot help ourselves. We can't. Now, my parents and your parents presumably traveled differently. How do they travel? They were waiting for the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. You know it, and I know it. They went once a year. They went to bed every night dreaming of that one great trip, and then they dragged you along in the back of the car, and you were counting 57 Chevys, hoping for the best. Okay, we all played that game. We don't travel that way. We travel because we have entitlement issues. We think it's part of our birthright. So we lie to other focus groups. Oh, we only travel for 1 2-week period a year? You're all liars. You travel on the weekends. You don't come in on a Monday or a Friday. You turn everything into a 3-day weekend. You can't help yourself. You're doing it 12 times a year. Shall we do the math? You do. So now the question is not whether you're going to go, it's how. That's why I did the new book, Tough Times, Great Travels, letting you know what's not just accessible, but what's truly affordable and in many cases free that you didn't even know about around this country, North America, and the rest of the world, that allows you to take advantage of an economic meltdown and still preserve your entitlement issues about traveling. And that's what it's all about. So for those people here who think that you can't, I beg to disagree. For those people here who think the one five-letter word that they love is later, Later is a word that I hate. Why? Because every time you use it in a sentence, you either don't do it as well or you don't do it at all. And right now, it's time to seize the moment. Now, I'm going to ask you guys a question, and anybody can shout it out. Are there places in the world that you don't think you can go to as an American? Okay, well, I'll get to the no part in a second. Who said yes? Okay, name them. Keep going. No, not places to be concerned about. Places where it's illegal for you to go as an American citizen. North Korea, Cuba, where else? Well, one's okay for you. I'll have it. Anybody else? Where? Want to throw in Iraq? Anywhere else? Afghanistan? Okay, let me help you through this. You're all wrong. There are 2,000 Americans in Havana tonight, not visiting friends and relatives, guys like us. They've been going for years. And the United States government knows it through every different administration and has always looked the other way, sort of like the Claude Rains character in Casablanca, shocked to find out that gambling was going on at Rick's Casino but collecting his winnings from the night before. Because to actually go after the people who are visiting Cuba would also be to acknowledge how many people are going. So we just choose to look the other way. A lot of Americans can go to North Korea as long as they're not posing as journalists lately. You just go in through China, Afghanistan. There are daily flights right now to northern Iraq where there's nothing going on, and tourists are there every day in northern Iraq. Now, I know what you're saying. It's not on my list. I know. I'd like to know who publishes that list. You know why? I finally figured out who publishes the list. Failed art history majors. That's why France, Italy, and Spain are always the top three destinations for Americans, because you studied the goddamn painting in college, and you said, well, I better go see it at least once, and off you go. We can do better than that. There are only four places I won't go right now, and those are the places where no one's in control. Would I go to Libya now? Of course. I know who's in control. North Korea? Of course I know. I know who's in control. So where are the four places I wouldn't go? Somalia, no one's in control. The Congo, not a good idea, right? Maybe even Sierra Leone is getting back together, and then there's Newark. No, I'm kidding. But the bottom line is there are 197 countries in the world, depending on which count you believe in. And if there are only four that you wouldn't go for the moment, how many does that leave you to go? It's called the world. So don't deny yourself and throw the list out. The list should be the 197 countries, not the ones you've always wanted to go to. Because the worst five-letter word, other than later, is plans. And most of you can attest to this, that the best travel experiences you've ever had happened when the plan didn't work out. And that's where you met somebody who changed your life. That's when you found a place in a nook and cranny in a corner you didn't even know existed and came home and told your friends about it. Yes or no? Come on. Thank you. Somebody raised their hand. Okay, great. Anybody have any questions, by the way? I'm happy to answer. We got some cards?
We have plenty of cards.
Let her rip.
You want to go ahead and start?
Sure.
Okay. Well, you mentioned pet peeves. Losing luggage is one of them and being charged for the restroom. What is another?
My pet peeve is the way airlines management treat their own staff. They treat them on a need-to-know basis, and if they need to know, they don't even tell them. So the very people who have the most amount of public contact with you are the least able to help you. And they get beaten up, and it's not fair to them. And it's not fair to you. So my mantra, which I've always believed in since my mother told me this, was never take a no from somebody who is not empowered to give you a yes in the first place. Another reason why you should never stand in line. So that's my pet peeve. The lack of basic, useful flow of information to the very people who have the only contact with you. So it's the lost leading the lost. It's bad.
Terrific. And again, for those who are joining us by radio, we are joined tonight by Peter Greenberg, Emmy Award-winning investigative producer and reporter and travel editor for NBC's Today Show and author of Tough Times, Great Travels. Sharing our insights, and we appreciate you taking our questions. Another one is, what is your favorite airline or airlines?
I don't have one. My favorite airline is only by route. There's no one airline that's going to satisfy me. Trust me. But, for example, I flew today from Bangkok to Hong Kong and then from Hong Kong to San Francisco. I flew on Cathay Pacific. That is definitely my favorite airline on that route. They do such a great job. And if anybody's flown them, you know what I'm talking about. There are lessons to be learned by other airlines just by flying Cathay. However, there are routes that they fly that I probably wouldn't think they do a great enough job on. You pick it by route. Same thing you would pick on based on what's an on-time airline. There's no such thing. An airline makes, these big, big, major announcements. We're the on-time airline. Really? Well, your flight between New York and Cleveland hasn't been on time for 15 years. And if I'm on that flight, you're not the on-time airline. You may have a 100% on-time factor between Cincinnati and Des Moines, but that's not the flight I'm on. So you're not the on-time airline. So you have to do it by route.
Another question we have is, I read that Virgin Airlines will start offering free Wi-Fi on flights. What luxury item do you think airlines will offer next? Or will they?
Well, talk about an oxymoron. What luxury item will airlines offer next? Wow. Let me explain. Water. You know what? Let's cut it right down to basics. Why do we fly? There are two reasons, and only two reasons why we fly. Are you ready? Reason number one, to go from point A to point B and not die. You're in an airline at 35,000 feet in this metal cylinder going 600 miles an hour. How amazing is that? And you lived. That's a luxury. Okay? How many people will call me? And it's always on Monday mornings. I'll get the emails or the phone calls saying, I just had the worst travel experience on an airline. That's the worst airline in the world. I will never fly them again. It's worse than the Holocaust. I mean, they go nuts. And I have to ask them two questions. Question number one, at any time during your flight, did you impact a mountain? No. Okay. And when you landed, did the wings cartwheel and explode into flames? No. So you didn't have a horrible flight. You had the best flight ever. You're alive. Reason number two why we fly, which is one of my pet peeves, once I land, get me off the plane. Don't tell me there's no gate available. That's a lie, too. That's a total lie. because they're more interested with the operation of the plane at the gate than they are with keeping you happy. It's called portable stairs. Let's go back to the future again with the human being concept. Wheel them up, I can walk down. Thank you very much. I can walk 100 yards into the terminal, and anybody else can too. So that's one of my big champion causes. We'll get back to that later. Go ahead.
Peter, you mentioned that you started your day in Bangkok. About how many miles do you log in a year?
About 420,000. And I'm only 19. But that's what I do. I'm not on the flight for the rich Corinthian leather. I'm not on the flight for the Broadway show tunes the flight attendants will not be performing on board. And I'm not on the flight for the wine list. I already told you why I'm on the flight, to get somewhere and not die. And that's what I do. When I worked for Newsweek, if I couldn't get the story done, even if it was a cover story in 2.5 days, there was either something very wrong with the story or something very wrong with me, you're never going to see me on a cruise ship for 3 weeks to tell you if the food's any good. I'll be on for 3 days, and then I'm gone because I got work to do.
Terrific. Peter, did you also get a deal on your flight to San Jose today?
A deal? Yeah. Christina Nem. Where is Christina? Are you back there somewhere? She drove me from San Francisco here. Thank you, Christina.
Terrific. With the economic downturn that has obviously affected the United States and globally, has this also affected foreign travels coming to the United States?
Yes, because of the power of the dollar. Last year, the U.S. dollar was in the dumps. New York City was on sale by their terms, which is why you couldn't get a hotel room in New York for under $750 a night. That's right, because we were the bargain. They were doing all their shopping in New York. Now the dollar is stronger. Their currencies are weaker. They're not coming. And two things have happened. Number one, hotel rates in New York have dropped to about $350 a night, which by New York standards is a bargain. That's an average, by the way. And if you walk up and down Madison Avenue, you're going to see a lot of stores that are closed. Shuttered, because they were dependent on the foreign market.
We have several questions that are related to miles. The first one being, when is the best time to get an airplane ticket with money and frequent flyer miles?
Well, let me answer that question two ways. Let's go back to the fraudulent nature of mileage programs. The inducement for you to join the program, and I know you're all members somehow, right? Raise your hands. Let me see. Okay. How many are members of more than one? Okay, so I know who I'm talking to here. The inducement for you to join was false, because the inducement was that the minute you got the 25,000 miles, you'd be on a beach with a pina colada stuck up your nose smiling. And you and I all know the answer to this, that when you did get to the 25,000-mile level and you called the airline to redeem your ticket, they said, oh, we have no seats at 25,000 miles. We've got them at 50. That's called extortion. And the airlines get away with it because they all operate under deregulation, which means no state can regulate the airlines. Now, if I was running a Toyota dealership and I was advertising in the San Jose Mercury News a Camry, I would be required by California state law and every other state law I might be in to reveal how many Camrys I had for sale at that price and the vehicle ID number so that when you walked in, they wouldn't try to tell you, oh, sorry, no Camrys, but we have an Acura. That's called bait and switch. That's a felony, and I would go to jail as a car dealer if I did it, which is why they have the law. Airlines aren't operating under those state laws because there's no state that's allowed to regulate the airlines. As a result, they are inducing you to join a program that they know going in is based on fraud. Most people don't realize this, and I might shock you, but if you saw the American Airlines special we did, we showed it on the air. The frequent flyer programs of the airlines make more money than the airlines. And they're valued more. Why? Because they're not only printing the currency, if you will, they're controlling the redemption. And they're keeping the redemption levels below 10%. That's a 90% ROI. The Sopranos worship at their altar. If you had that kind of return on investment, you wouldn't be sitting here tonight. You'd be building another theater or something. The bottom line here is, what's the point of a loyalty program that doesn't reward you for your loyalty? And right now, we're just addicted to it, and they know it. And we all know that part of the definition of the word addict is abuse. And so now you're abused by it. However, there's a silver lining here in this economic meltdown, which goes to answer the question, at least the first part of the question is this. As the airlines tried to drop as much capacity as they could, and you know today if you read the news, Americans dropping more capacity out of San Jose. As they tried to drop as much capacity as they could to save the airlines, the passenger numbers didn't go back up. They went lower. So there's still a lot of empty seats. which means it's the one time in recent memory that the airlines are being very flexible about redeeming frequent flyer miles, because they never want to redeem a frequent flyer award if it means displacing a revenue passenger. Guess what? They're not displacing anybody now, so come on. So now's the time to redeem your awards. However, you got to play the game, because the question that you asked also included money, which really makes me angry. Because the airlines, once again, are not raising their fares, but they're generating revenue any way they can. And now what they're doing, United Airlines in particular, is saying, okay, if you want to use miles to upgrade, oh, by the way, it's like a bad HMO. It's now called you have to copay. So it's not just 25,000 miles. It's 25,000 miles plus up to $700 just to get an upgrade. I wish we had a Secretary of Transportation who could basically say, okay, boys, game over. And you know what? Nobody'd fight him. You know why? You know how many lawyers are members of frequent flyer programs? You know how many judges are members of frequent flyer programs? They're just waiting to hear the case. Somebody needs to actually do a class action suit against the airlines claiming that these frequent flyer programs amount to nothing more than an unregulated lottery. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV, but I would love to argue that case, and I'd win it.
Peter, given your comments, do you believe that frequent flyer programs will go away? And if not, do you think there'll be a revolt by frequent travelers to change the
Talk about a timing of a question. Actually, they'll never go away because there are too many lawyers and judges who would take that case right then and there. They'll just continue to change the rules. They'll continue to up the ante, which they do about every 15 minutes, about mileage numbers that you need and blackout dates. So the programs will still be there because they make so much money for the airlines. Remember, the airlines get gazillions of dollars for selling mileage to their mileage partner companies, whether it's a bank or a florist or a grocery store, so that when you use your Affinity credit card, you're getting 1 mile per dollar spent. They pay for that. And the reason why the airlines love it is because they know that they're going to restrict 90% of you from redeeming your miles. It's money in the bank from day one. So the programs are never going to go away. They're just going to get worse. So having said that, if you're sitting on a lot of miles, remember this. I don't trust the airlines as airlines. Why would I trust them as banks? Think partner airlines with their strategic alliances. And think 330 days out. And pick a flight you want to go on somewhere overseas on one of the partner airlines and get that issue today. Because, first of all, if the domestic airline goes out of business, so does your mileage. And second of all, at least now you have a redeemable ticket on another airline that's not going to go out of business, and you get to see the world before they raise the eligibility rates again.
Terrific, Peter.
I'm not shy. Sorry.
No, but that's terrific. And again, for those who are joining us by radio, we're joined tonight by Peter Greenberg, Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, travel editor for NBC's Today Show, and author of Tough Times and Great Travel. As you know, Peter, there's been a real focus on the green being carbon neutral or even carbon negative. Given this, do you think the airline industry will adopt a more green model in plane design and fuel, or are they fearful they'll lose even more seats or passengers?
The answer is yes and yes. The airlines are going to be forced to become more green because the European Union, for starters, is making them become more green, which means you can't separate out one plane from one city and not another. So any airplane that's flying overseas is going to have to be green for here as well. So you're going to start seeing more and more stuff being done in that area. And the airlines are going to fight it all the way because it means money.
We have a number of questions that are specific to travel that appears to be coming up for a number of our audience members. If you go to England and Scotland next year, would you also include a few days in Ireland?
Do you drink? Here's the issue. Who asked that question? Come on. Okay. How many days are we talking about?
I don't know. Three or four.
Well, three or four. Listen, the distances aren't going to be that great to get from London to Dublin or London to Shannon or wherever you want to go. Question is, do you really want to hit the ground running, or do you want to have some time to kind of really enjoy it? Meaning, if you're going to go, if you spend less than 5 days in one of those locations, you'll come back a wreck because you'll be schlepping. Remember the schlep factor? So I'm all in favor of doing it, but not just to check it off a list. You want to be able to immerse yourself, and you can't really do that in 4 days. I don't think you can. Then you should have asked the question. Go for it.
Another member of our audience asks, is it safe to drive on your own in Portugal and in Spain? either via rocks and or theft.
You know, there's the first rule of European driving, and that is what's behind you is not important. I'll wait for that. Thank you. You may not be in an accident, but you're sure going to cause a few. Did anybody remember the movie Gumball Rally? Okay, I'm dating myself, but somebody's shaking their head. Okay, would you be comfortable driving in the Gumball Rally? No. You know what? Don't do it to yourself. Although, in Spain and Portugal, I have driven before and don't have a problem with it because you're driving on the right side of the road and you can actually, you know, get organized a little bit better. But for those people going to Ireland, Scotland, or the UK, you know what? Do the words roundabouts ring a bell? You'll end up in a hospital. Somebody's laughing over there because they know, right? Okay, fine.
Another member of our audience would like to ask, are there upscale international hotels where retired travelers can get major discounts, up to 50%?
Let me talk about the myth of the senior discount. It's a discount against what? You know those entertainment books, right? You've seen them for every city? And it sounds great, 2-for-1, 50% off. Yeah, 50% off their highest published rate. Exactly. So the bottom line is, that's why there are no senior discounts that matter anymore for the airlines. You can do better on your own. And I strongly believe that you shouldn't get... Now, there are certain senior discounts that still matter. There are senior discounts on Amtrak, and you can actually see that you get a discount. Mm-hmm. But it's not about upscale hotels or downscale hotels. It's about a matter of the deal you negotiate with a human being on the phone and not on the internet. Because the same practice that I told you about with the airlines also applies to hotels. And that is this. If you go online or you call the 800 number for a hotel, whether it's upscale or not, you're not talking to the hotel. You're talking to a clearinghouse that was given a certain number of rooms at an established rate. They have no ability to negotiate, and they have no idea what their inventory is. Once again, it's only the inventory they were given. Instead, you pick up the phone and you call the hotel directly. And you do not ask to speak to reservations because they'll only reroute you to the 800 number and you're right back to where you started from again. You ask to speak to the MOD. And by the way, hotel managers hate when I say this, but it's true. The MOD stands for the manager on duty or the director of sales because those are the only two people at the hotel who truly know what their room count is. And if the Schmidlap wedding just canceled and they got 60 extra rooms they got to dump, internet's not going to know it and the clearinghouse is not going to know it. And there are other reasons why you want to talk to that person is because you're going to establish a relationship. How many people here fly out of San Jose? Okay. How many people fly out of San Jose 12 times a year? Anybody? Okay, I'm going to point right to you. Can you give me the first and last name of anybody who works at the airport? No. Well, what do you know? So you've established no relationship. So as far as they're concerned, every time you go to the airport, it's your very first flight. Let's abuse you. But you can tell me who your butcher and your baker and your candlestick maker is. You just haven't worked on those relationships. I do it at the airports all the time, and I can tell you how to do that. But let's stick with hotels for a second. When you call that manager on duty or that director of sales and you negotiate directly with them, then you're going to do what my mother always told you to do. Write your thank you notes. You've got their first and last name. Thank them. Let them know you're looking forward to seeing them when you get there. And then when you get there, you shake their hand and say hello and thank them again. And guess what happens? If the Schmidlap wedding really did cancel, you got yourself the presidential suite without asking for the upgrade. Because hotels don't make money when you come the first time. They make money when you return and tell all your friends. But if you've never established the relationship and you love the safety of behind the internet veil, right, which is destroying the whole concept of conversation and community in this country, and you cannot cover the world in 140 characters, I don't care who you are, for those people who like to Twitter. And by the way, I Twitter as well, but I do it to let people know the stories that we're working on, period. Not what I had for breakfast. But bottom line is you need to establish those relationships. And then it's not about the senior discount. It's about your discount based on the relationship you established.
Another member of our audience apparently is going to be traveling to Europe and like to know, what is your current thinking about booking a trip in August? Should they buy their ticket now or wait until August, and what type of, and they actually would like to go business class. Does that make a difference?
Okay, first of all, August to where? Who wrote that question? August to where?
UK.
Okay, here's the problem. It's better than going to Paris in August because they're all on vacation and everything's closed. Okay. You have to go that, or could you go after September 5th? Got to go there. Are you a school teacher? Okay. When you got to go, you got to go. Okay. Bottom line is this. Right now, historically, Europe, and especially the United Kingdom, was inexpensive to get to and very expensive to be in. Not the case anymore because the dollar got stronger against the pound. A year ago today, the pound was $2.01. Today it's like $1.60, $1.59. That's a big difference. So now what you can do, and you can do this for your travel agent as well, say, hey, listen, I want airfare and I want it bundled with hotel and I want it locked in dollars. So you're protected against any currency fluctuation. So you can do that today. I'm a big fan of what I call the 45-day rule, and you're about the 45-day rule right about now. That is, you never want to book outside of 45 days because the computers are not set up to give you a discount anyway. But within 45 days, in that 45 to 60-day window, you can do it. I mean, no point in booking for something in March right now. That would be suicidal. But August, you're just about there. Okay? Within 45 to 60 days out. Okay?
Perfect. Great advice. Next question. Do you know of any travel deals such as hotel and event ticket packages for the Vancouver 2010 Olympics?
I'm going to give you my surefire way. Listen to me, I said surefire, didn't I? Oh, boy, I'm in trouble now. Almost surefire way to always go to any major sporting event, whether it's the Super Bowl, the Final Four, or every 4 years, one of the Olympics, either winter or summer, and go for free. Okay, now everybody go, ooh. Okay, good. Okay, thanks for playing along. Okay. Here's how you do it. Now, you got to roll the dice with me on this, but I've gone on the show and talked about this on the air, so this is nothing new. They hate me when I do it, and it works every time. So let's say you want to go to Vancouver for the Winter Olympics. But I'll even give you a better one. Let's talk about the Super Bowl. It's the same principle, okay? We know there's going to be a Super Bowl next February. We don't know which team is playing. I mean, they haven't even started the season yet, but we know where it's going to be. We know where it's going to be for like the next 2 or 3 years. So I don't even know where it is next year. Let's say it's Miami. I'm just throwing that out. No, it is. Oh, what do I win? Okay. So now you call the concierge at one of the top upscale hotels in Miami. Now, you want how many tickets, sir? You want 2 tickets to the Super Bowl and 1 room. Is that correct? Okay. No, you don't. You want 3 rooms and 6 tickets. And you call the concierge at that hotel and say, hi, my name is so-and-so. Here's my credit card. I'd like you to get me 3 tickets, three rooms at the hotel and 6 tickets to the Super Bowl. Now, remember, you only really want 2 tickets in 1 room. You're laughing, but you don't know where we're going yet. 3.5 weeks before the game, that concierge is about to become your new best friend. He's going to call you and go, do you really need all 3 rooms? Do you really need all 6 tickets? And he becomes your broker. And he splits the deal with you. And he sells the other 4 tickets and gets rid of the other 2 rooms. And you make so much money in the process, you just went to the Super Bowl for free and you stayed for free. Because I'll tell you why. There's a great deal of difference between a booked room and a blocked room. You had a booked room. And all those blocks don't matter. It's the booked rooms. That's how you do it. And the same thing happens for Vancouver. If you look at some of the ads right now, for opening ceremonies and some of the big events, I mean, it's going to cost you $12,000. That's ludicrous. Remember, you need to know who's controlling the blocks. You know what it is? Olympic committees of different countries and advertisers. Call the corporate numbers of the advertisers. Ask who's their chairman of their Olympic committee. Introduce yourself and say, listen, I know it's too soon now, but there's going to come a time when you're going to look at your room count and realize you blocked too many rooms. And when those blocks come open, can I grab 2 from you? Believe me, they'll want to keep your name on file. Because at the end of the day, the accountants who run that asylum are going to want to know who can account for those rooms.
Given the
How many people believe that I just said that? It works.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Is there a website where you can determine if there's empty rooms that are in a block that haven't been used yet?
No. Here's a little thought. Human being. Oh, yeah, there is a website for that. It's called www.we'renotgoingtotellyoucallahumanbeing.com.
That falls in line with the next question is, tell me a travel tip I do not know.
I just did. All right, I'll give you one. Some of you may have read this in one of my previous books, but it still works. How many people have ever heard of Rule 240? Nobody. Okay. Well, you have. Okay. Can I tell them? Is that okay? Okay. It's an old rule from the original days of the Civil Aeronautics Board, which is still on file with the Department of Transportation, with many U.S. legacy carriers. That would be United, American, Delta, what's left of Northwest, U.S. Air, Frontier, and Alaska. It does not apply to Southwest. It doesn't apply to Airtran. It doesn't apply to JetBlue or Virgin America because they don't have interline agreements with the other airlines, which means you can't check your bags through. You always have to get your bags. Okay, here's what it says. In the event of any flight irregularity of any kind other than weather, and you invoke Rule 240, they have to take your ticket, endorse it over to the next available flight. Not their next available flight, which may not leave till next Thursday. The next available flight. And while everybody on your original flight is reading Chapter 3 of War and Peace, they can look out the window and wave goodbye to you because you are gone. Now, one thing you have to remember is don't check bags. And then you're gone. And it really works. Now, some airlines will tell you, oh, that doesn't work anymore. Really? Ask to see a supervisor. Remember my rule? Never take a no from somebody who can't give you a yes. It works. It has a new name, and so it has, but everybody knows it as 240, but the new name is 12020. We're getting into all sorts of minutiae here, but if you just walk up to them in a situation like that where weather's not a factor and go, hey, can you 240 me? You're gone. Now, if it's the last flight of the day and nobody has another flight, well, then you're not gone. But if there's another flight going, you're on it. Does that qualify as a tip you didn't know except for you? Okay.
In that same vein, what is a travel light tip that we may not know?
Well, I think you know it. How many pairs of shoes do you need on a trip? Yes, I'm looking at you. No, sorry. I mean, how many do you need? You don't. I mean, it's amazing what a black outfit can do over a long period of time. So, once again, if you have to look, Delta Airlines right now is now charging you $50 to check a second bag on an international flight. That's a $50 fare increase, whether you like it or not, because most of you are going to check two bags on an international flight. Well, you don't have to. You know what? Just don't wear that many clothes. I actually believe we should all go to the airport naked. You know why? The lines won't be pretty, but they're going to move real fast.
In that same vein, Peter, what are the three things that you cannot live without when traveling?
Oh, okay. That's easy. My BlackBerry. Sorry, I'm type A in that regard. A cell phone that gets signals, which means I carry three of them with me, or three different services, and a flashlight. Because you never, I'm telling you, I went out today. I stopped at a drugstore to pick something up, and they had little these great little flashlights. I just bought another two. You can't believe me. You need the flashlight. If the electricity goes out at the hotel, there are no flashlights in your bedroom, but you got one. Or if you're on a night flight and you drop something behind the seat, you can find it. So
that's good advice. Actually, I've done that before.
Yeah.
Given the number of miles you travel, do you have a pilot's license? Or by chance, are you a fireman?
Well, I am a fireman. But I'll answer the first question. I am not a licensed pilot, but I do carry what's known as cockpit and jump seat authority. I train six times a year in the flight sims for almost every aircraft type that flies. I've done it since 1985. And the reason why I do that is not because I want to fly in the cockpit, although I can. It's because I can go in at any time and have conversations that really help me to report the news. Those of you may have seen the special that we did on Dateline earlier this year, a long 3.5-year investigation I did on what really happened when the Concorde crashed in Paris in 2000, and it's not what you think. That all came because of conversations I've had in cockpits. So I'm not a licensed pilot, but if I was on a plane and the pilot and co-pilot both ordered the fish for dinner and it was really bad fish, I'd probably be the one you want in the cockpit because at least I know where all the bells and whistles are. The second question is, I really am a fireman. I've been a fireman in New York since I'm 18. I'm on duty 6 months a year.
Terrific. We have last question about a cruise, and then I'm going to move on to a different type of
okay.
travel. When booking a cruise, is it better to book several months in advance when the offers are rolling in, or is it better to look at the last minute?
We are a last-minute nation. Right now, it's already June. It's the middle of June, And they're still discounting Alaska cruises. When was the last time you ever heard that? They're doing 2-for-1 cruises for 7-day cruises to Alaska for $5.99. And if you want to bring a third person, they're $99. Now, you couldn't have done that a year ago, but you can do it now. So with the exception of an inaugural ship cruising season or a particular time of the year like Christmas or Easter, there's no benefit right now to booking way in advance. The early bird discount are for idiot birds. Because you may get 10% off, but right now it's like 75% off. And that's if you go next week. Remember, an unsold cruise ship cabin is revenue the cruise line will never recoup once the ship sails. Because nobody joins the ship in the middle of the cruise. They lose the revenue for the whole week. So believe me, you're in the driver's seat here.
Terrific. And again, we're joined by Peter Greenberg, author of Tough Times, Great Travels. And we are at the point of our program when, fortunately, we have one last question.
Fortunately for who?
I think for us audience members. This has been terrific.
Okay.
What do you think about the development of space tourism, and would you ever try it?
Well, there's space tourism, and then there's suborbital tourism. If you want to play the role of the 1959 monkey in the original Mercury capsule, then you sign up for that space tourism they're talking about now, because it's just 20 minutes of suborbital flight, and it's just a nice entertainment. It's not space tourism. So when we actually leave the bounds of Earth, that's when I'll be on that flight. The suborbital stuff, no.
Terrific. Well, I hope you all enjoy tonight's program brought to you by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. Again, we'd like to thank Peter Greenberg, travel editor for NBC's Today Show and author of Tough Times, Great Travels, The Travel Detective's Guide to Hidden Deals, Unadvertised Bargains, and Great Experiences. Our audience here in San Jose, California, and those of you joining us by radio. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club in Silicon Valley is officially adjourned.
I found it.